It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Here he is, and we promise not to say anything stupid on the radio like some other radio people have lately. And if we do, Lisa's here to edit it out, so you'll never hear it anyway. But we're going to behave ourselves. So, Scott, you ready?
Yes.
Let's get to it.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
And David Holland making comments here and there.
Of course. Well, Monday's market was an interesting market. It sold off pretty sharply in the morning. It looked like it was going to be a pretty rough day, but, boy, you know, the market just really seems to have quite a bit of resiliency to it and fought its way all the way back. The Dow ended up down 15 points on Monday's market. No big deal. Closed at 12,962. S&P down 5. NASDAQ down 25 because Apple was off quite a bit.
Yeah, I know you want to talk about Apple. You know, it's one, the market's off 0.1%. So I call that a flat market. It's nothing. It's almost like the, you know how we, a lot of what happens is that there is this there's this resistance, like a stock or the market doesn't want to get over. It gets personified and it doesn't want to get over above this certain number. Well, now it seems like there's this the resistance where it doesn't want to go. Now that we got the 13, we don't want to let go of it.
Yeah, well, there's still so much cash on the sidelines out there that and there's so many retail investors that are not participating that I think if we get a good jobs number this coming Friday, we may be able to really take some momentum into the next couple of weeks. I certainly wouldn't want to forecast beyond that. But
can you make a couple of phone calls and, you know, make that happen?
We'll see what we can do.
Don't you know anybody in the labor department?
I'll see what I can do. But I think we're going to have a good jobs number on Friday. That's the big one that everybody's looking at for the week. And I want to talk a little bit about what else to expect this week. But oil flat, closed at 107. Gold down 3.5 at 1706.
Oil's flat because everybody's saying, okay, what does this whole thing mean with Netanyahu meeting with President Obama?
That is quite a bit of it, yes. There also has been some news about whether or not U.S. lawmakers are going to crack down on oil speculators. Remember, we talked last week about how when things get volatile, the traders rush in there because they love volatility, and it adds to the volatility. Well, there's some portions of the Dodd-Frank bill that tried to limit that.
You didn't get the benefit of my very huge tsunami eye roll I just did. I mean, they went around my head. My eye sockets went around three times. I think it's the most ridiculous thing to say that, oh, well, we're not going to allow you to make these trades or make those trades. I get that that happens. But you know what? When oil, at some point, people, those traders, they stop doing it. And if they don't, they can lose their shirt. So, that you know, I think we got to be real careful. It's a real slippery slope to start saying we're going to limit this kind of trading or that kind of trading just because they don't like what they're doing.
Yeah, what we're talking about is the CFTC, which is the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. They basically oversee futures trading pits. Under the Dodd-Frank rule, they are supposed to limit how many contracts any individual trader can take. And they, frankly, have been dragging their feet. They say, well, we can probably implement these new rules for the June contracts. And just over the weekend, 23 senators and 45 members of the House, all Democrats, wrote a letter to the CFTC and said, hey, come on, guys, let's go, you know, because oil prices don't need to be this high. They're blaming it on the speculators, which I don't think is entirely true. Of course, the Republicans are going to say oil prices are so high because the president doesn't know what he's doing. So it's very much a political football.
Always. Well, what can we beat you over the head with? I think that the reality of what we deal with is oil and gas is going to be something that is going to fluctuate, and it's just part of how things work. And so, you know, if you can expect, ladies and gentlemen, for gas, unless there's a major, major change, breakthrough in technology, or there is something that happens horrific sort of way with Middle East conflict, you should expect gas to run between $3 and $5 a gallon.
Yeah, now there were some announcements from the auto industry on Monday's market that they're taking a really serious look at producing trucks that can run on natural gas.
I love this. I saw the same report, Scott. I love that. You know, I was pulling down my street. I think it was this morning I pulled out and I saw the mower sitting there. You know, they got those big ones that you know, where they can cut like a football field with one swipe. Okay. And I looked at it and I was thinking, you know, you could put a propane tank gas right on the back of that thing.
Yeah, the problem is not the truck. It's not building the truck. The problem is the infrastructure. There are only 400 natural gas filling stations nationwide.
Hey, look, they can. Well, why can't they use the propane tanks, you know, the little blue rhino ones?
You probably could.
You can get that at Lowe's, man.
Yeah.
Hey, auto industry, get with it. But I love that. All right, Lisa's telling us that we're out of gas and we need to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
That's clever stuff. Whoever came up with that idea, the pure genius. Okay. Speaking of pure genius, what else you got for us, Scott?
You didn't get the benefit of seeing my massive eye roll.
I think that one sunk my battleship. Okay.
That's all right. A couple of economic reports came out Monday, mixed economic reports, but still, even the bad one was not that bad. The Institute for Supply Management said the service index rose to 57.3 last month. That's good. That was above analyst expectations of 56.1. That's another one of those diffusion indices, so the more above 50, the better. So the service sector rose last month. That's good economic news. In not so good news on Monday's market, new orders for U.S. factory goods dropped in January by the most in over a year.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, except that, you know, I always like to look at the number behind the number. There was a big capital spending tax cut that expired in 2011.
So it got front-loaded in December?
Yeah, a lot of companies moved their stuff up, and they did actually revise December's number up to 1.4 from 1.1.
Okay.
So it's important to not just look at the headline because there's other good stuff in there. Corporate news, fair amount of pieces of corporate news. Apple announced, you know, we'll be watching Apple closely on Wednesday. They're launching.
You know, we probably need to throw a disclaimer in here, Scott, that we, you know, because we talk about Apple quite a bit. Mm-hmm. We do own Apple in some of our portfolios.
We do.
Okay, there you go.
Yep, we sure do. We'll be watching them closely on Wednesday because they're launching the iPad 3, and maybe there's some rumors out there, Apple TV, we'll see. But they did announce over the weekend that the App Store has had its 25 billionth app downloaded.
That's extraordinary. You know, on that point, you got to be careful. The new attack front, Lisa's nodding her head, and she knows what I'm going to say already. The new attack front's coming on the technology with the viruses and the spammers and the scammers and all of that's going to come through the mobile apps. So be on the lookout for that. See something weird? Delete it. Don't open it.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. Also in tech news, Yahoo. You know, Yahoo, talking about two companies that are going in very different directions. Apple just up and up and up. Yahoo just can't. They are another company like BlackBerry, just can't seem to get out of their own way. They are preparing for a massive restructuring with potentially thousands of layoffs.
You know, they could have sold themselves to Microsoft way back. And I would not be surprised that they collapse into the arms of a Microsoft or somebody like that, or maybe a Google or whatever.
I think hubris got them.
I think you're right. Could Google acquire them? I know they got the money, but do they?
I don't know.
Would there be any type of, what do you call that?
Antitrust.
Yeah, monopoly stuff.
That would be a tough one to get through. Also in corporate news on Monday's market, lots of material stocks sold off, the Rio Tintos, the CF Industries, most of that on the heels that China has cut their growth target to 7.5% from 8%. Doesn't sound like much, but we're talking about a huge economy.
Well, 1% on how big is their economy? It's what? How many trillion in economy they got? I can go to my CIA fact book here. Hold on. Where is it? I know it's in the back of my stack. Let's see if I can find it quickly. I don't think I can. All right. Well, go ahead. If I find it, I'll chime it in.
Yeah, they decided that they're going to cut their forecasted growth. They're putting some things in place to try to avoid a real estate bubble, which is good news. They set their inflation target for 4%. That sounds really, really high to us here in the United States, but that's a lower number than what they've had in a while.
We'll take that. We'll take a 7.5% growth rate and 4% inflation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So big news out of China. They're also trying to hold down their budget deficit to 1.5% of GDP. That's up from 1.1%.
That's an annual deficit, not their cumulative. Do we know what kind of total debt they've got?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we do. Well, I can tell you that the local governments, one of the big concerns there is the local governments have a tremendous debt problem, about $1.7 trillion owed by local governments. So some concern there that they're going to go through some of the same problems that we've seen in a lot of our counties and municipal bond issues that have gone out there that have struggled to make the payment. In the news on Monday, Jefferson County, the home of Birmingham, Alabama, approved by the federal court to go ahead and proceed with their Chapter 9 bankruptcy, $4.23 billion case.
You and I were talking before the show about that. What was the source of their troubles?
They have massive sewer system debt because they rebuilt the whole sewer system, political corruption. They had some local jobs taxes that were cut. At the beginning of last year, you may remember an analyst named Meredith Whitney who was on 60 Minutes and said, all these municipalities are going to go bankrupt and it's going to be the worst thing ever. Well, we didn't really see that at all. But we are starting to see some just selected municipalities like this one here in Alabama that are starting to file various types of bankruptcy filings.
So you've got political corruption, you've got a sewer system that didn't work out, and, well, I guess this bankruptcy will wash their trouble right down the drain?
Yeah, we'll probably wash somebody up the river and something else down the drain.
All right, China. China's GDP, purchasing power parity, which means basically trying to put it for proper context for dollars, their economy's around $10 trillion ballpark. So 1% is a big number that they're going to bring that GDP down.
Yep.
Or their debt. That was their debt, right?
GDP.
The reduction in their GDP expectations.
Yes, that's right.
That's growth. A huge reduction in the growth rate.
Reduction of growth.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on WESH Channel 2. If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
All right, we're back. And just for clarification, talking before the break with Scott about the reduction in China's GDP, and that matters because it affects a lot of things.
Yeah.
That it's a half a point reduction in their expected gross domestic product growth of that number.
Right.
0.5% on 10 trillion is 50 billion. Now, to put some perspective on that, how big is that number? Well, that is the entire economy for a year of Costa Rica, Bolivia, Panama, Luxembourg, North Korea, that's a friend of the Chinese. Any of those, that's their entire country's productivity for a year is how much GDP has been, the estimate's been cut off of China.
Yeah, and think about how many people are supported by the Costa Rican economy. Basically, every Costa Rican.
Exactly.
You know, so that's a lot of people that are really dependent.
You know what we didn't talk about, Scott, and I know we talked about it earlier, gas prices. Any expectations there?
Well, you know, we talked about the limitation of some of the speculative trading.
Yeah.
I don't think they're actually going to make any progress with that. As far as oil per barrel prices, still at 107 for West Texas Intermediate at the end of Monday's trade. So no real relief there. I think we're going to have to see some significant change in the rhetoric in the Mideast.
Well, good luck with that. Here's something that I thought you might find interesting. Economists at Deutsche Bank recently calculated that for every $10 increase in oil prices, that translates into a $25 billion reduction in consumer spending.
I saw that. It's about a 0.2% value of GDP, too. That's pretty significant. $20, if it stays up there for an entire year, is almost a half a point on GDP. And here we are fighting to get whatever growth we can get. We're not talking about 7.5% like China is. We're talking about 2.5, maybe 3.
Well, but we can do the same thing. Listen to this. So $25 billion off of our U.S. economy, that is the entire nation of Jamaica, or let's see, Macedonia, Chad. Now we get down to the low part of the list. You could take a couple of these. Hey, you can throw in the West Bank, Rwanda, a couple of those. I mean, it's a big number.
Yeah,
we get so used to hearing billions and trillions, but these are very large numbers.
And $10 a barrel in oil can happen over the course of a couple of days, as volatile as oil has been.
I know those mean-spirited traders out there trying to gouge you. All right, cutting into my chicken wing budget, you know that? That's what's happening.
You know, but as you said, it's a lot of money. $25 billion in consumer spending, that's money that can be spread out with local restaurants.
We've talked about the multiplier effect. There was a velocity of money. It's like six times that money moves around. And I'm not joking. I like chicken wings. And, you know, there's a gas station right next to the place where I get my chicken wings. Hess Station on the corner of Granada and Clyde Moore's. And right next to it is Hooligans, and they've got some of the best wings. They have Wally wings. They fry them, and then they grill them. They're incredible. Okay. And so if you don't spend it at the pump, you might spend it right there getting the wings and the beer. I mean, it's just the way things work.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll see some relief there. I don't expect it until probably after the summer sometime.
Okay. All right, Scott. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Get to those portfolios. And let me continue, ladies and gentlemen. One of the things that we've been talking about, of course, is the volatility and the ups and downs of the market. And, you know, what do you do to make sure you're in the right place? And I thought on my bike ride this morning, I thought about an analogy for you that I think would be helpful. And I'll try to get to all of it before we go to the break. Here's an analogy for how we need to look at investing in the market. You know, when you deal with the market, especially, of course, it's not the upside volatility anybody's worried about. It's the downside. It's when things go down. Well, I thought of this analogy. Let's say that you've decided you want to go hunting up in Alaska or some Alberta or somewhere in Canada if you're a hunter, okay? And for those of you that aren't hunters, just hang with me. And let's say that you go, you get there, you're all set to hunt. The guide's told you what to pack. You have listened. He's given you all of the instructions about how to be safe in the woods, and you're going to go hunting caribou, okay, or elk. Well, he's told you that there's also a lot of bear in the area. And so he's told you if we come across a bear, here is how you need to behave. If this happens, this is what we need. We have a plan and we're prepared. So you get out there in the woods and then what do you know? You run across a bear. Well, you say, forget the plan. I'm running as fast as my feet will carry me. Okay. So you've thrown the plan up in the air. Now, anybody knows anything about animals, that bear might decide to chase you, or you might be running away from the guide who can protect you with his, you know, 3-inch Magnum shotgun. But when you throw the plan aside, you put yourself at risk. So the same is true for investing in the stock market. When you look to invest in the stock market, stocks, and also the same can be true with fixed income securities, the plan should be that I'm going to keep it in the market. I know what I'm dealing with. I know I'm hunting big game. I know I'm dealing with risks. I know that it is a mistake to cash all in when the market takes a 5% drop. I know all that. So we've got to avoid doing that and just throwing and saying, forget the plan. This is why I spend so much time working with clients on building financial plans, helping them understand the rules of being in the woods, helping them understand that, okay, here's what we need to do. The truth is if you're going to have money in the market, you need to understand how the market behaves. And that's why we talk so much on the show about how the market behaves. I have Scott give you the update and we talk about what's happening so you understand the rules of the woods. Because if you don't know, you're going to get eaten alive. And that's not what we want to have happen. We don't want to, especially if we run into a bear market. So this is the point. This is the purpose. So you need to have a financial plan and you need to have a plan and already know. And of course, this is where an advisor comes in, what to do when things go badly. Now, if you shouldn't have been in the woods to begin with, okay, if you shouldn't have been there to begin with because it's not for you, then you don't go. You know, you don't make the trip, fly up to some freezing part of Canada if you've got a sensitivity to cold, okay? Or if you're asthmatic or you've got some other health condition that wouldn't allow you to do it. The same is true for your money. You don't go and put your money in the market if it's not what is realistic or appropriate for your situation. If you are very conservative as a person, the way you invest, you don't belong in the stock market. If you are, your situation calls for you to draw a bunch of income out of your investments, it's time to have a retirement income, then you don't have all your money in the market. Some, but not all. Okay. Anyway, I wanted to say that. I thought of that analogy, and I've been looking forward to sharing it with you on the show. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
The following top secret message is ready for declassification.
All right, top secret. Well, I could have also used a two-minute warning. A couple of these things I want to share with you could fall in either category, but it's not a mystery, and it's being armed with information. FINRA. You ever heard of FINRA? Well, let me tell you who FINRA is. One of the largest organizations that has a big impact, involvement, participation, and oversight with financial advisors. So my segment I want to share with you is a little bit about knowing how financial people are regulated, but more so about things that FINRA is putting out alerts on. And I watch for these alerts because it's good to know what they're concerned about, but also to see some of the things that I can share with you to be on the lookout for. Now, FINRA is, it's FINRA.org if you want to go there. They've got a ton of good information about ways to protect yourself. But they're the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. You can see why they go by FINRA. Okay, it's the largest independent regulator of all security firms doing business in the United States. They supervise, get this, they supervise and regulate 4,400 brokerage firms, 161,000 branch offices, and 630 registered security representatives, that's stockbrokers, security agents, the folks that sell securities for a living. They've got a number of things on their website, but one of them that I thought was very interesting that I wanted to talk about. Every now and then, you'll see, if you are retired or you're approaching retirement, you'll see an invitation come in your mail for a seminar, a financial seminar, a free lunch seminar, they're called. Now, it's not a very nice way to characterize it, but the industry has been beaten up so much that all kinds of folks have said, look, you guys have got to do a better job of regulating these kinds of things. Because what happens is people go to a lunch or dinner seminar and they feel pressure. You know, they've gotten a free meal and they feel pressure to talk to the person, to meet with them, and or maybe buy or hire them for whatever it is that they're selling. Now, the problem is that it used to be, once upon a time, okay, these seminars were, I think, a really good thing. And hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of people have gotten some good solid education by attending these programs, these seminars, these events over the years. But like a lot of things, when something good is happening, the bad element can come in. Con artists, scammers, bad people doing bad things, bad behavior. And so everybody's really focused on this. Now, every now and then I'll see an invitation, and conveniently my parents are in the target demographic. Isn't that politically nice way of saying that? They are in the target demographic for getting these mailers. So I'll see them and I'll look at them, and I'll be able to think about them and evaluate them. And some of these things they get are extraordinary. Now, I've got more to share. Let me take a quick break. And I want to talk a little bit more about this because there's some things I want you to be on the lookout for. Stay tuned.
80.
30.
50.
Every mile brings us closer.
25.
Every mile in a city near you.
75.
Help us stop diabetes.
100.
Join the Tour de Cure.
60.
Register to ride.
36.
Or sponsor a rider.
50.
call 1-888-DIABETES or visit us online at diabetes.org/tour. How many miles will you ride?
25.
Okay, so you're wondering, David, what is the big deal? What's wrong with a free lunch? Well, nothing. Nothing's wrong with a free lunch. It's just that always remember, anybody that offers a free lunch or a free something, they're trying to do something. Most advisors have not filed for not-for-profit status. I mean, they're doing it because they want to meet people. Now, part of what's out there in terms of what I read is it's almost like you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent for doing any type of marketing activity. And, you know, I think that's absurd. But you can be on the lookout and be careful. Now, here's what I think about free lunch seminars or dinner seminars. I've done them in the past. I don't do them anymore. I did them from in 2003, 2004 through 2007. So I did them 3 or 4 years. And they were really good. It was a great way for me to meet a lot of people. I didn't sell anything to anybody at these seminars. I didn't tell people to bring their checkbook. I didn't try to sit there and talk to people all night. You know, I would do the presentation and then I would, you know, say, hey, enjoy your dinner. If you'd like to come in and meet with me and talk about your situation, I'd be happy for you to do that. And a lot of my clients, I met that way. But I've also done other things as well. But the problem is, as I said before the break, a lot of people got into this and kind of messed it up for everybody. The thing that I see and what the regulators are very sensitive to is that, number one, there are some really exaggerated claims that are made sometimes on these seminars, either in the presentation or in the invitation you receive. It's just ridiculous, some of the things that are said. And listen to this. FINRA did a sweep, and they conducted more than 100 examinations of free meal seminars. And half of the situations, the advertisements, the invitations were misleading or exaggerated, half of them. And then 10% of them had fraud or sales of fictitious products. So it was a scam. So what I think, if you're interested and you get an invitation, here are a couple things I want you to be very tuned into. I'm not saying don't go, because that's not fair. If you want to go, go. But number one, if you can't very quickly see the name and the company of the person who is offering the seminar, throw it away. Why is it a mystery? You know, if you ever got an invitation from me, ain't no missing it's from David Holland, okay? My picture, my name, my credentials, it's all there. And once you have that information, if it is there, I want you to go and look them up on the internet. You can do a check them out. There are lots of resources. Go to FINRA.org and you can navigate there. For brokers, you can call. You can go to FINRA.org and you can do a broker check. Investment advisors, you can go to the SEC's websites. There's lots of ways to check it out. But if you want to go, you need to check it out before. And now, let me be fair here. And this is, you know, I'm not necessarily running a popularity contest with other brokers or insurance agents or advisors. But to be fair, if all you're doing is going to eat a free meal and you have absolutely no interest in that person, well, that's your call. I wouldn't be comfortable doing that. But be aware that this is something that has been a good thing in the past, and there may be a diamond in the rough here and there. But when I look at the invitations my parents receive, I go, you got to be kidding me. They're over the top. There are so many things wrong with these invitations that I don't even know where to start. So I think you have to be really careful about attending one of these events. And the reality is that there is more and more and more fraud. The Federal Trade Commission recently released its annual reports on consumer complaints, and the volume of consumer complaints jumped by over 24% for 2011 to almost 2 million complaints. That's a lot of complaining, okay? Identity theft topped the list. You've got to do everything you can to protect your identity. And anytime anybody anywhere asks for any information about you, no matter what it is, you need to stop and ask yourself, do they really need this information? Does the clerk checking you out when you're making a cash purchase at one of the big box stores really need your zip code or your telephone number? No, they don't. All right, that's all the time I have for you today. I'll share more of this the next time. Thanks for being with me.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.